call the Transportation Committee meeting to order. Our first order on the agenda today is to continue with the ATC repeal highway safety. And we have the Director of Division of Weights Measurement Standards, Joe Swanson. And you have two of your folks with you. You want to come up and something right up there, Joe, and we'll get into your testimony as to, and if however you want to address it, it's perfectly all right. Chair, if you want to address it into the proposal that we had that came from the Division of Commerce or the Department of Commerce, you could do that, break into it. You've seen our mock-up bill that we're working on. So just, you folks, just have your day.
I can't ask for any more than that, Senator. Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Swanson. I am the Director of Measurement Standards within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Within the division, currently, we operate the 11 fixed weigh stations, and we issue the oversized overweight permits throughout the state, and we have the Weights and Measures program. When ATC was sunsetted, the governor asked three different departments if we would submit proposals. We submitted a proposal, which I understand, Senator, you all have seen a copy of our proposal. I think what I'd like to do then is just kind of maybe tell you a little bit about our philosophy and how we'd like to see a safety program. And I'm going to address most of this not to safety, and then touch briefly on the insurance package. Our feeling is, in operating the weigh stations, dealing with the Trucking Association for the last couple of years, we feel that there is a need for a safety program. 2 years ago, the weigh stations permit program were transferred over to Commerce for public safety. At that time, we were not the authority or the permission or whatever to do safety inspections was not granted the Department of Commerce. So we have not been involved in the safety inspections per se of any commercial vehicles in that 3-year period, except to ask ATC to give us permission at the weigh stations if we see an imminent safety hazard or if our operators spot one, to have the authority to park that vehicle until it's fixed. We have done that for the last 3 years. With the sunsetting with ATC, we will not even have that authority after the 28th of the month. With that, we made the proposal that we gave to you for a commercial vehicle safety inspection program. What we are recommending is that every vehicle over 10,000 pounds and its associated trailers be inspected twice per year by the Division of Measurement Standards. We chose a twice per year inspection program because we thought it was an excellent starting point. The Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance on the West Coast recommends a 4-time-a-year inspection. In our discussions with different members of the industry, they have discussed anything from a once-a-year to a 4-time-a-year inspection. We felt 2 years, twice a year, was the best place to start. Now, we have some experience through Weights and Measures in inspecting devices, large capacity scales, gasoline pumps, rack meters. Looking at how a piece of equipment is wears and tears, we think twice a year is a good place to start. We identified about 15,000 separate units that are currently licensed in the state that would be subject to the inspection program. That's 30,000 inspections a year. Our intent is to inspect those vehicles at the location of the owner or at a specified location throughout the state. An example, Sealand down in Anchorage. We would go down to their shop unannounced, and we would say, we will be there the week of March 14th. And we will inspect your vehicles for a week, and we would like to have all of your vehicles in the fleet that you can be in the yard that week. The intent of that, and one of the things that we feel is necessary, the intent of a safety program is to make sure that the vehicles on the highway are safe. And the best way to do that is to let the company know that you're going to come down and inspect them. So then they take their mechanics and they go through them and they prepare them for an inspection. At that time, we would inspect the vehicles on location. Our recommendation is if they do not pass the safety inspection, we reject the device, very similar to what we do to a gas pump. If it doesn't work, we put a sticker on it, and you can't use it until you fix it. We figure if we tell the mechanic, hey, we're going to be there, give them all the time in the world, the vehicles, 95% of them, will be ready to operate that day. For the small owner-operators who don't have a large yard, what we anticipate doing is to identify a location, maybe one of our weigh stations. It may be a DOT yard. It may be somebody's yard. It may be a vacant lot in Anchorage or Ketchikan or Sitka. and by mail tell those people, we'll be in Ketchikan the week of the 20th. Owner-operators will have their vehicle at this yard during this week, and we'll inspect the vehicle. We feel that way we can... What we're looking to do is to make sure that the vehicle on the highway is safe. And I keep stressing that because writing a ticket never has seemed to me to do very much. You know, if we write tickets for safety violations, we write 20 this year, and then we write 40 next year, and then we write 80 the next year, doesn't mean we're doing a better job. It just means there's more unsafe vehicles on the road. But if we don't let them on the road until they're safe, I think we've solved our problem. We think we need to do this twice a year. But we need to put the burden on the industry itself by saying, you have your vehicles ready. We'll come and we'll inspect them for you. The majority of the vehicles are, of course, located in the Anchorage Fairbanks area. There is, in our proposal, a breakdown of where those personnel are and how many people we think we'll need to inspect and where we'd locate those people. What we'd like to do to tie in and to make the program more workable and the utilization of personnel, we'd like to ask public safety if we get this program to give us the portable scale program. We don't want any people, we don't want any money. All we want is the responsibility to do portable weight inspection or portable scale enforcement. They currently have 32 cents, 16 cents? 16. Oh, anyway.
6 cents of eight.
No, six eight sets of eight. I'm sorry.
8 sets of 6, pardon me.
That's better. 8 sets of 6 portable scales where they do wheel load enforcement. And that basically is a set of scales that you take out and you set them alongside the highway, and every truck that comes by pulls up and they check the axle and gross weight. And if they're overweight, then you cite them for an overweight condition. We've experienced over the last couple of 3 years a number of complaints from cities like Homer, cities like Anchorage, where you have a large construction project going, and you have gravel trucks running through neighborhoods, gravel trucks running through the city, and one of the complaints is they're speeding, they're overweight, and we know they're overweight because there's gravel falling over the sides, and my children are blah, 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 and I think you've all heard these complaints. What our intent to do then is, combined with the safety program and the portable way program, we'll send a team of 2 people into Homer, into South Anchorage, into Fairbanks, anywhere in the state, Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, we don't care. Take our portable scales with us and do portable weight enforcement and vehicle safety enforcement. And we think we can clean up in a week any problem that any small community would have. If the problem continues to exist, we'll send the people back in until we get the kind of reaction from the industry that we need to make sure that the people who are using that community and the vehicles that drive in it are all safe and not overweight. So I think it's what we're looking at doing is to utilize the existing personnel we have, the classifications, the way station operator one, to do the safety inspections and the portable weight inspections. We don't need any authority to do portable weight inspections. We already have that. All we need is a nod from the governor's office to go ahead and do it. In essence, that's the safety program. Questions, please.
Senator Joseph.
Well, if you have this program of announcing to the carriers that bring your vehicle in and we're coming to your yard May 5th, would there be a tendency to have unsafe vehicles on the streets in April? You know, because it would be before the cleanup time. I mean, do you have to stagger this in a way that it's unexpected and there's a good maintenance program going?
What we're in addition to, and I'm sorry I missed this, in addition to the normal twice per year inspection program, we intend to run an audit program. In other words, we will go out and set up a roadblock. We'll utilize one of our own weigh stations to audit to find out if, in fact, the twice a year is the right way to go about doing it. If we set a roadblock up and we check 50 or 60 trucks, we'll get an indication of whether or not the trucks on the road are safe. I guess, yeah, towards the end of the season, you might have a bunch of trucks, and if they knew that hey, they're not going to be here until April, and they've already announced it, so we won't start our maintenance until. And there may be a tendency to do that. I think, though, it's more important that Senator, that we give them the opportunity to go ahead and fix the vehicle. It's been my experience, and we do this quite a bit in the fishing industry with fishing scales. We will tell the canneries, hey, we're going to be at your location at Dutch Harbor on such and such a day. Have a repair company with you so we can certify the scale and get it in action. And we found that going out there, we have about a 95 to a 98% approval rate on all those devices. We know from our own experience that they will stay accurate for 90 to 120 days. to me, to have that guarantee that those things are going to all be safe twice a year is worth more than just about anything else we can do. Your question is valid. I don't think other than an unannounced inspection, but I'm afraid an unannounced inspection would end up with me going back maybe two or three times. And I'm asking for 20 individuals to do the job, and I think I'd have to ask for another 20 to be able to keep going back for re-inspections if I don't announce it the first time. So I guess part of it's one of economics. But I know that I can guarantee twice a year they're safe.
Senator, speaking of economics, you're saying you don't need additional money.
Oh, no, I didn't say that.
Oh, that's right. I thought, because I just heard about people involved.
Just for the portable scales. What we're asking for is as we've identified the program, it cost us about $800,000. There's a fiscal note, at least a broad fiscal note, in the back of our proposal. We're asking for 20 additional positions. We currently have 9 weigh station positions that 2 years ago we placed them on a seasonal basis. We'd like to bring those back on full time. Because what I'd like to do with the personnel, when they're not doing portable weight enforcement or safety inspections, I'd like to put them in the weigh station and have them do size and weight enforcement at the weigh stations so that I get full utilization of that individual. We've found this to be beneficial. Trying to use the same person to do more than one thing might get 7.5 hours of work out of one of them.
Before we go any further, for the record, they tell me that I failed to do this, that I need to have, for the record, that Senator Josephson, Senator Fakes, Senator Paul Fisher, Senator Booth, Chairman Coghill are present.
Was there anyone here in the beginning?
Oh, yes, there was 3.
You were here.
I was here. I'll begin on 3:30, whether you're here or not.
I'm sorry, sir.
But Senator Fisher and then Senator Booth.
Just 2 other things.
Yes, sir.
We're talking safety. So we can make the assumption that you're not going to have a hang-up over how big the, you're not going to force people to identify the vehicle, whether it's a private carrier, whether the thing is so many inches high.
Senator, I don't care.
That's out, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good. Okay, then one more, and that is, have you checked into privately certified inspectors?
We looked at a proposal last year, and the one we looked at that time was to certify certain service stations and whatnot downtown throughout the state. And then the state would go in and take a look at those service stations and certify that they did and could, in fact, do an inspection. There was quite a bit of dollars involved in the whole process. My personal opinion is that if you want the vehicles inspected, what we found in the Weights and Measures program, that the only people who can do it, I should put it that way, I feel that we can do it better with state inspectors.
Senator Fisher, I'm not talking to portables where you're out to really catch, but it seems to me if you were to put it out on a bid basis, and every garage in the country wouldn't be eligible, but those are big enough to handle it. We wouldn't have to worry about the retirement and all these other things. It seems to me it would be cheaper to contract some firm in Anchorage, some firm in Fairbanks. They, in turn, would go to the site with their folks, and it seems to me it would be cheaper. They would still have to perform as a state employee, but maybe I'm wrong. I just can't imagine the state doing it cheaper than a private enterprise.
I can understand that. I have some concern myself. Now, we're looking at doing about 30,000 inspections a year right now with about 20 people. Now, if we take somewhere like Homer and we say, okay, and I don't remember, well, it's okay. Let's say there's 50 vehicles in Homer and there's only one service station that we approved and you own the truck. And that guy says, okay, it's going to take 40 minutes to do the inspection, and I charge $60 an hour or $35 an hour or $32 an hour. We just created a monopoly. His competitor comes in and he says, okay, you're getting 40, I'll do it for 25. And the other guy says, I'll do it for 15. So pretty soon the inspection takes 4 or 5 minutes. I think we would get a better product. And I don't think it would cost us that much more. We keep that inspection program with a group of state inspectors. And I'm certainly not advocating that we increase the bureaucracy too far, but it's been our experience that with a trained cadre of inspectors, we get a better quality product than we would. Okay, let me explain it this way. If the state has a monitoring program, we go out and license a number of service stations to do it, 100 throughout the state. It's going to take us 5 or 6 people just to run the licensing program. to go out and inspect those. So we've already got a fifth of the people that we would use if we did the physical inspections ourselves. And I think if I kept putting it down on paper, I think we'd end up pretty much with a draw on cost. And I think it would end up being more expensive to industry.
I just don't want to make, I don't want to hear the assumption that private enterprise would cheat.
I'm saying that.
It would gradually get worse and worse and worse because with state employees, there's coffee breaks and things like that too, that would minimize their effectiveness.
Yes, sir.
But Pennsylvania has, I'm sure you're aware of it, has a program. And there's liability there on those garages. And if there's competition, that's fine. They still have to do certain things.
Yes, sir.
And if they don't, there's a liability. They have to have a bond and everything else. So it seems to me that with all that assurance, who cares whether one guy can do it for $30 and another $60, as long as they get the job done. You have a monopoly now, the state does.
Okay.
So I guess I'm a free enterprise system, or maybe it won't.
Senator Booth.
Jay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to think a little about what you said. I keep relating it back also to the new laws that we'll be passing with automobiles for inspections on automobiles, and the next thing you know, we're going to have agencies running all over.
Who's doing that?
Private industry will be doing that in the city. And you're talking about hundreds of thousands of cars. But that's not my question. It's got to relate into this thing somewhere, I'm pretty sure, Joe.
Okay, Senator.
What's to prevent them from going back? Like you go into, you go to Soldotna, two of you guys get down there. Yeah, they set up this portable deal and they start running through for over a week and so on and so forth. You're there for a week, everything looks pretty good, everything's going real good. You guys leave town, they go back to the overweights again. Who's going to judge this? Who's going to catch them? Who's going to, are you going to wait for the people to complain, then go back down and do it?
More than likely is.
It's like the guy that goes in and he got bad tires at the inspection station. He goes and he says, we're going to inspect you the day after tomorrow and you better get them new tires. That's what he borrows his buddies, puts it on the front door, the front wheels. Or the duels or whatever. And the minute you make your inspection, put the tag on goes the bad tires, and off goes the old ones. I'm not talking about the responsible trucker. Did you get that, TJ? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the irresponsible guys.
Senator, it's been my experience. I've been in the regulatory side of this thing now for about 8 years. And there's about 5% of the people that we write about 100% of the laws for, and we can't keep them, and they're still there, and they're always going to be there. And I don't think we could have put 5,000 people on this alone and stopped that guy from trading those tires and not getting on the road and doing his thing, and we'd still not catch him. What we're looking at doing is trying to provide some assurance to the public that the other 95% are going to have safe vehicles. Now, we may, through the weigh station program and through what we've talked about here, where I said we would have roadblocks and whatnot, we may catch a few of those guys. Those are the people that we've asked so we can have some sanctions and we can park their vehicle and we can cause them some economic hardships, because most of those people, the only way you're going to get their attention is with a large baseball bat. But we're not going to catch them all. If they didn't exist, we wouldn't need public safety at all.
Let me just follow up.
Yes, sir.
Question. I'm getting some POMs that I'm sure my colleagues have too. People are pretty mad about this lack of safety with four axle. I guess I don't want to talk about that.
No, you can. Please, Senator.
I don't want to talk about
that. Senator, but we're going to be, I'm getting the same part of it here. I'm getting the same thing. That, and actually, four-axle regulations within DOT and not within Commerce. And I'm working on getting the rates up and getting the pros and cons on it. We'll bring that before the committee.
Okay,
it's
about
all
that.
Different.
It's not in our jurisdiction, Senator.
Well,
and it will not be in this process either.
Okay.
And it doesn't go out because of ATC.
Okay.
Mr. Swanson, you say about $800,000. What do you figure? You figure 20 people at what range?
Okay, there's a few. Have you got to please get some copies of this so that they've all got
I think that maybe I'm just trying to relate back to that we had testimony from the ATC, one of the ATC commissioners, saying that they did 1,400 inspections, and that's less than 10% of the trucks. But it cost them $1,400,000 to do that.
We feel
$1,500,000 in the fiscal 84 budget, and I'm just trying to relate that. if you had these many inspectors, how you would do your scenario to cover the state in a six-month period, and like you would go into Nome, but you wouldn't go to Nome every week, you'd go to Nome twice a year, and you do those, all of those inspections up there. You'd go into the Kenai, and you'd kind of area, identify these places. I think that this is what we're...
Currently...
Is this scenario that you've got on here, excuse me, Joe, is this scenario to do with your proposal to do...
Yes.
That when you gave this to the governor, right?
Yes, sir.
Does this have anything to do with air carrier?
Okay. Now, I started my remarks by saying I was going to direct the first portion of this to the vehicle safety inspection program. The $800,000 includes what we consider to be strictly an administrative program to cover the insurance requirements that are in or are a requirement of the initiative, Senator. We feel that that is not a field inspection program. And in the middle of this, you will see a clerical administrative section right in the middle up on the back basis says proposed division of measurement standards. We plan to issue the current 25,000 overweight oversized permits that we do and monitor the insurance program both for air carriers and for the trucking association with the people that are in that block. And we already have about half of them. There is not a requirement, as I read or in our proposal, that the insurance program for either the air carriers or for the surface transportation have any field inspection involved in it. It is merely the fact that that a company or an individual show proof of insurance and that we, through an administrative process, it show that that is currently happening, that they have it. Now, what we have suggested is that a piece of paper from the insurance company being carried in the vehicle at all time or the aircraft, and it says, this vehicle, here's my proof of insurance or financial responsibility. And then we issue them a certificate very similar to what's in an aircraft right now that says that they have financial responsibility. That's all we're saying. And that's an administrative program. You put it in a computer and you watch it, and you put a requirement on the insurance companies that says if a guy cancels his insurance, you have to carry him for an extra 30 days and you have to notify us. And then we notify the local authorities and take the thing out of service. But that doesn't take a heck of a lot of people. I think we're asking Martin how many clerical positions for to do that process. And then a couple of supervisors, administrative assistant, AA2 administrative assistant too. So about six people total for that process. The safety program is a field inspection program. And we're asking for range 12s, which are the same as our weigh station operators. Our weigh station operators, when we got them, had been trained by the federal government to do commercial vehicle safety inspections. And they did commercial safety inspection on commercial vehicles at the weigh stations and ran the weigh stations. That was their two jobs. Range 12. ATC personnel are from range 16 to range 22. We think we can do the job with range 12s because they've always been done that way. So I can get 20 people where, for the cost of where they were going to get about 8.
Will you have a station in Anchorage and Fairbanks or in the center places where if an individual comes in and says, well, I'm just bringing a truck in from the lower 48 and I want to have that certified so that I'm compliant, that they can schedule at their convenience into a shop in Anchorage or Fairbanks?
What we're anticipating doing there, and it's covered briefly in our proposal, you buy a new vehicle. The requirement by the state is that you have this sticker on your vehicle that says you had a safety inspection within the last 6 months. We don't have the manpower or the time or the travel funds to get to Kodiak to inspect this brand new vehicle. The bureaucracy certainly is not going to say, hey, until we can get there, you can't drive this brand new truck that just got off. So all we're requiring that person to do is to notify the office and by our permit process, where we currently issue permits either by telecopy or telex throughout the state, we can send a temporary authority to operate. We're not going to use the word authority, by the way, a temporary registration or something. But that he keep in the jockey box or in the vehicle itself that says, I have notified the Division of Measurement Standards. They have authorized me to operate this vehicle until such and such a time, at which time then we will either have a team coming in to inspect And if they get it and it's 4 months, it's a brand new vehicle we're talking about. And the most important thing to do is to get that vehicle on the road, not keep it off the road.
If it's a new used vehicle?
Same thing.
Give them a permit or
okay,
or
if we're Senator, if we're talking about metropolitan areas, if we're talking about Anchorage, if we're talking about Fairbanks, where I've got way stations and personnel, or the Kenai, where I've got the Sterling station, we can direct them to go there and get the safety inspection by those personnel. But the ones that I worry about is Ketchikan and Kodiak and Nome and Bethel. If I fly a man to Nome to do one vehicle, that's not very darn cost-effective. So, yeah, I may leave him there for 4 months before I have the scheduled team going in. But from a cost-effective standpoint, unless you want to give me $1 million travel. Senator, I said something. Senator Fisher, you look.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a problem where it says, how about Yoni? Let's say that I have a truck in Nome, okay, but knowing bureaucracy the way it sometimes is, all of a sudden I can't get inspected twice a year. So we're in the eighth month. You still haven't come. How am I covered? I don't violate the law.
You gave me the authority, or this gives me authority to enact regulation. And what we ask this
necessary
regulation, Senator. We ask for a change in here that said that we would inspect twice per year, not once every 6 months or not semi-annually. If I can inspect you twice per year and I don't get to you until the eighth month, we're all still legal. If I tell you semi-annually and I don't get to you on that day, then you're illegal. The bureaucracy's got you. That's why we've asked for the change. Because I understand what you're saying. The courts ruled on us on the scale houses in weights and measures that if we didn't inspect the scale at the weigh station on exactly at 6 months, then every ticket we wrote the next day was illegal. So that became one heck of a scheduling problem to get our trucks and our personnel there to do that. So we learned from that mistake. So now what we're asking on this one is that we do it once every, just twice per year. Means I guess we could do it twice the last day of the year, really.
These proposed regulations that you're talking about, can we get an advanced copy prior to passing? Some of the ideas that you're going to do prior to passing the bill.
Most of them are in our proposal. The idea of them there is are there. No, I have not. The ideas are in our proposal. Asking me to write regulations is one.
The chances are the regulations will still, we can point to the proposal. We won't be shocked with the regulations if we understand the proposal.
If you do, you're going to have my job, Senator.
I think that what the senator's getting at is that we get far afield in some of the regulatory functions. When we're talking about this, it's the reason why I brought this thing up about a truck. Most of the people, particularly, say, in the petroleum business, will buy a 1 or 2 year old truck from another vendor and bring it in. Well, if you're in the Compa River or you're down on the Parks Highway, they get a permit to operate that thing for 60
yes.
days until such time as they can get it in. But within that 60 day period, they would have to go in and take it into Anchorage or into Fairbanks or one of the centers and have it gone through.
Any one of our weigh stations, Senator, and they're located at Valdez, at Sterling, at Tok. One of the things that's in the proposal is that we have asked to have sufficient manpower to man the Tok weigh station 24 hours a day, so that any vehicle traveling from the lower 48 entering the state will be subject to it. That's the only place that we would have a mandatory safety inspection for a vehicle that didn't have a safety sticker on it. That's to apply the same rules to the people who were driving from Oregon up here as our own local truckers have.
Mr. Swanson, that brings up a real sore subject, I think, with the industry, and that is the fact is that here you got a driver that's on road time, and he gets stopped at a weigh station, and he takes 4.5 hours to get inspected, and the cost effectiveness of that to the company is probably on a scale of 1 to 10 is a -10.
So I got the weigh stations in the game. Senator, what I'm saying, if you're, we've already looked at within the proposal is reference to the, what's the alliance?
Commercial Vehicle Safety
Alliance, which is an alliance of most of the western states that have all met and through reciprocity have agreed to accept each other's stickers. In other words, if we inspect a vehicle here and it gets on the highway and goes through Washington, they'll accept our sticker as a current safety inspector. That's one means by which we would not do it. But if we are going to require people who own trucks and operate them in Alaska, what we are saying is that somebody entering the state should have that same inspection. We do not intend to do safety inspections at any of our other weigh stations, except for where we indicated that we would. Somebody would say, hey, I've got a new truck, and would make an appointment to meet an inspector out at one of the weigh stations. Or during the audit program, where we set a roadblock up to find out if in fact the system works. And that's important.
Well, I think that if a person's bringing a junker in, then he ought to be inspected at the weigh station in Tok. But if he's bringing in a reasonably good truck that the discretion of the people that are operating it go on a permit for the 6 months or the 60 days or whatever it is, and then until he gets in there. What I'm saying is that don't make your regulations so narrow that they create an economic hardship on the operator, but on the other hand is that you've got to assure that there's a certain factor of safety in that thing that's going down the road. Any other questions of Senator Joseph?
There's a draft bill from the committee staff. Could you tell me if you looked at that bill and if it meets the objectives of your agency, and if not, what changes you
made? We spent, took the bill up from Senator Coghill's office yesterday. And our proposal, the one that I've been talking about, and the bill, they went completely through it. As I have indicated, the change on the twice per year rather than once every 6 months. We have a couple of questions. There is some verbiage, and the verbiage is in the initiative itself. And the portion says a person who carries passengers or freight for hire intrastate shall procure and maintain security in the amount of blah, blah, blah. The question is, does that involve a taxi cab? This is for the insurance purposes, because that's an individual who carries passengers for hire. Does it involve the steamship that runs from Fairbanks to Nenana because he's got passengers for hire? And, of course, ATC did not regulate those things. But the initiative does not exempt them. And maybe we need something in here that clearly demonstrates that no. Also, when they did buses, they only regulated buses that carried less than or more than 16 people. So there may be some things that we would have to look at, Senator, as far as, you know, hey, this doesn't include those. Because I sure as heck don't want to do taxi cabs. I just talked the city in Anchorage into doing them for weights and measures.
But isn't there a municipal ordinance in Anchorage that requires insurance for taxi cabs?
Not insurance. I don't think so.
Would they be covered under the mandatory insurance law?
Yes, that we have checks, Senator.
Did you ask a question, Senator Joseph?
Apparently, Mr. Chairman, they are covered. Cab drivers are covered by mandatory insurance. So isn't that a non-problem for our practice?
Okay, now this gets into a couple of things. And as you take a look at what the initiative says, and we spent a lot of time. Go ahead, Senator, I'm sorry.
If you look at the full text of the initiative, and it says Section Article 5, and it says up here, responsibility of motor and air carriers. I agree with you that in the text of the initiative, that was what the voters seen when they voted on it, does not say that. But I think that we could probably fairly well interpret or get a quote-unquote Attorney General's opinion to the effect that we're talking about air carrier and we're talking about motor carrier, because we certainly wouldn't want to be regulating every freight frigate out there in the Aleutian chain and the barges on the Yukon and Tanana River and Jim Binkley's turboat. You know, I think we could open up a Pandora box and we
possibly.
And I think that we should. I think that's a good point that you brought up. We'll see if we can't get that door closed.
Legislative intent would do it. Just a small note would do it. We would. My problem on it is, and having spent a number of years in this thing now, 4 or 5 years down the stream, when somebody decides that, what can we do with taxi cabs, somebody will look at this and say, well, heck, we can cover them under this. And that wasn't the intent of the law, and that's why I bring it up.
Okay, good. We're a good point. Real good point.
I'm going through here, Senator, continue to answer your question. I have a couple of notes. Okay, in the, and I think we've cleared this up with Senator Coghill's staff, but one other one under enforcement. We'd ask for a very brief change to may issue a stop use or removal order. An appropriate order to enforce may not be clear enough, so we'd ask for that change. But that was the only two we had, wasn't it?
We've got several.
Yeah, the exemptions.
We've got several other areas in the exemption that we're still, we're probably going to have a new draft web done by Friday so that we can look at it. We'd like to, I've called for it to be before the committee on Monday because I want to get it over. We're pushing a deadline.
This bill will allow us to do everything we placed in our proposal. The regulations are as much concern to me, Senator, as they are to you, and they're a fair to write. There's a couple of the safety standards we are looking at, and what's the federal
CFR 49, Code of Federal Regulations, that deals with motor carrier safety.
And that's how we're going to go about inspecting a vehicle. It has nothing to do with when we will do it or any of the rest of it. So that's a model set of regulations that's out currently, and that's just the process of going through the inspection.
And for the record, we'd also, that Avis Thompson, who's the chief of the permits and weigh stations for DOTPF, is with us.
No, Department of Commerce.
Department of Commerce. What's the?
I hope you're not trying to tell us.
Department Rager with the Division of Measures and Standards. That's your new handle.
When we got the weigh stations and permits, rather than calling it Weights and Measures and confuse everybody, we picked a new name. And I really wished I'd just called it Weights and Measures. It would have been less confusing, I think.
Is there any other questions, Mr. Swanson? Senator Tate?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Joe, you have about, 46, 48 people under you?
49 currently, or 40.
49 people. And
48, I'm sorry.
Is the current Division of Measurement Standards chart correct?
I hope so.
Okay,
yes,
I want to congratulate you for not having a deputy director. You are to be congratulated, and I'm very proud of you.
Oh, then you're going to turn it over where I said I would.
I see that, but you also are adding 20 people. But you are one of the few folks, I think, in state government that are having 50, almost 50 people under you that don't have a deputy director, and I really want to congratulate you for that.
It's easier to control a couple of chiefs than it is a deputy.
Well, that's always been my theory, but many directors don't feel that way, and they're increasing their own little bureaucracy by having a deputy director and special assistant or whatever. Anyway. I'm seeking out deputy directors, and it's nice to know you don't have one.
Okay. Aren't you glad you didn't take that job?
Senator Booth, I know that you were talking about these four other people, and you said that you needed a supervisor and an assistant for four people.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you'll look underneath the administrative section on the last page, this is our proposed. There were no assistants. I'm sorry. There was an the term administrative assistant. There's an administrative assistant 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I said we would have an administrative assistant 2 in charge of the program, and then an administrative assistant 1 that would be in charge of the permit process, and another would be in charge of the.
We got four people in there.
No. If you will look.
You remember you said that we have four.
No, we were going to ask for four additional people. I'm sorry.
Oh, Senator. Okay.
To go along with our current staff.
So this definitely doesn't mean anything.
We are proposing that position if we get the. See, we'll have a division of about 60.
That was my question. You now have 49?
Yes.
And that's going to jump up then to 69?
68. 20 new positions.
But you're going to take a senator from ATC, which is 45 now.
That's 45 now, so we're reducing that.
Net reduction of 25.
Reduce that by 25.
Probably should be on record, Senator, that if this proposal is taken, that none of these positions are currently in ATC. And I guess I should be up front. I mean, that should be noted. These are not current ATC positions.
But there's a whole bunch of positions in ATC that are going down.
Yes, sir. Well, the point
those
being
are mostly in the commissioner and the field examiners and...
That we will not take current ATC personnel to fill these positions.
Good.
There will be new positions, and that point needs to be made. I would hope that some of the people who are there will come over, but they'll be take a heck of a cut in pay.
Any other questions of Mr. Swanson and Mr. If not, thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Well, for the benefit of the committee, where I'm going to schedule, Mr. Swanson was due back on Wednesday the 6th, and I'm going to switch that around to Friday the 8th so that he doesn't have to travel back and come back and go back and then come back because he's got meetings on the weekend. So,
Senator, both my wife and I thank you.
You tell her that.
I will.
All right, before we get off of ATC, Jacob, have you got your stuff back from Anchorage yet? Joe Jacobson? Do you have your stuff on ATC for the air carriers back yet?
No, we have some copies of testimony from Monday. We have tomorrow for you, and also the information that you requested on certification and FAA safety requirements. We'll have that for you tomorrow.
Give it to the staff. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate the time.
Yes, Chairman. Senator Booth.
I talked to you, about a certain $300. We discussed that, or you want to do some other, or you just take that under advisement?
Take that under advisement right now, but I've got it. He's got it.
Yeah, I just don't want to get away to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Spend some time. You're here in front of you. Anybody else?
Yes, more than that. We've got two bills up, and they're both the chairman's bills. And what I'm going to do is relinquish the chair of the committee to the vice chairman, Senator Fisher, and I'm going to go to the other end of the table. And we've got some maps, and testimony from the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce and from the Interior delegation is in Seattle. For some reason or other, their airplanes got a flyover, so I'm going to have to do the honors for it.
Well, are they going to be here now, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Will they be making an appearance later this week?
They're trying to get in here, and what I'm going to suggest is that they just keep on going, go back, and then come back and do it before the finance.
You have the chair.
I'll do the chair.
Give me the chair.
Before we hear any testimony on the bill, are there any comments at all from the members? Yes. Senator Booth?
Mr. Chairman, I move you adjourn.
I knew something like that was going to happen.
Senator Coggins.
What bill do we have up those?
Lower the numbers. We'll go first with
the first bill.
Central 39.
39. $630,000 to provide for the update on the proposal is in this yellow packet that came from the community just the other day, and it shows where the proposed road and the three bridges are. star, it shows the proposed agricultural area. It also shows the area that is the Doyon Select Timber Reserve. And we find that as we look at this area for an agricultural potential, we're looking at it also for two other reasons, one of them being that of opening up the interior forests, which are privately owned, which is owned by the Doyon Native Corporation up on the Kantishna River. And then there's quite a large stand state timber that's also in there. Actually, you're looking at a two-fold area for resource development, and then we have a large amount of gas and oil interest in the area at this particular point. We think that that probably will be in the back of this folder. You will see a historical data as to just exactly how the whole program was put together when we came down after the conveyance of the native lands were established to the Native Corporation of Tocatilli. Why, then we came in and asked for an appropriation to fund a study of the area as to the agricultural potential, which we already had as far as the soils come. The soils identification from the USDA, and ask for a $500,000 appropriation which was passed in the 1981 session to give us a reconnaissance of the area as to how would be the best way to get into the area. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 222 gave us the responsibility to design a bridge, to design the road, and to appraise the private property that went through the right-of-way. This was accomplished, and out of the design came the determination of what the appropriation or what the dollar factor would be in order to open up the area west of the Adam. Like I say, Mr. Thomas was to be here today, and Mr. Bainbridge would be here today, and they were going to do the testimony on this. But my recommendation is that we take a look at the philosophy behind what the community is trying to do, and then we pass it on out of transportation, pass it on over to finance, where if the dollars are there, why then the project can go forward.
This first time I've heard that we have no increase in construction. Normally, we lay it for another year or whatever. Turns out we had higher construction costs. I can remember you coming into the state of fair, into transportation last year, cost side. And are these figures, from what I can tell, are these figures the same?
That's right.
What contributed better than holding the line on when everything else in the world was going up?
Well, I think that I contributed to the fact is that it can be done by a community, and that for the appropriation here, Section 2 in the bill is a TARO, where that you transfer the responsibility of the administration of the funds to the municipality, and instead of taking the normal 12% to 20% in order to administer something, we have a TARO right now with the state of Alaska and building the 2 mile ag roads between Fairbanks and Enana. Or building those with an administrative cost of less than 2%.
One other question. Yes, go ahead. What's your lead time on the steel?
Well, if we could have, the lead time on the steel is about 8 months for this type of a span.
So that if we get moving on this year, you're not going to get started on until next year?
If we got it through this session, well, we'd probably construct the bridge in the spring of 86.
Senator Cockrell, I understand how you could build a 440-foot length bridge
reviewed the 81 cost estimates and revised our cost accordingly. There has been no major increase in the construction cost as we have projected in 1981. Consequently, we feel we can still build the bridge and approach for 4.8 using standard lineal contracting techniques. This estimate includes all construction cost engineering administration and soon construction begins in September of 85 and ending in July of 87. I mean, FN, Baranovich, Nottingham, and Dragger are very reputable people.
Yeah, I thought of Baranovich did, so.
But this doesn't include the 22.4
miles. 22.4 miles, if you go back here, go back here a little bit further in this document, and you'll find where that Thomas and Associates have tested here that they can, and there, if you go back a little bit further in here, in this pamphlet, and if you want to, that the East Middle River and the West Middle River and the Little Tanana Crossing, and that's from Thomas, and then you go back a little bit further, and you'll be able to find the development.
In terms of the agricultural project, is it confident that there will be other state expenses in the way of subsidies or other state outlays to make that viable?
So I think that once we get the transportation, once we get the transportation system in there, that opening the area up in a different manner, and that was one of the reasons why I had so much trouble with Bob Tom, with Bob Palm, was that his method of developing an area was totally, completely opposite, and contrary to the way I would say that we put the land up into a proposal, and if you want me to go into the total agricultural proposal, but I feel that this road is opening it to the west, not only for agriculture, but also for transportation structure to the Cantician area and to the forest timber of the Cantician. If you want to get into the agricultural part of it, I should get all that material for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, I think we need to get into the philosophy of the agriculture thing, because if we're just building a road, that's part of it. And I like building roads, and the farther west they go, that's great. But when you have an agricultural program that is a disaster, are we going to put number 3 online or what? They're struggling with cows across from me. I go, every time they burn over there in Port McKenzie, I get 3 calls from constituents. Kids go to the hospital with asthma, and they got the cow problems over there. There's contentions, there's complaints, and I got a 4-page letter from a dairyman the other day, and I don't even like farmers, but they write me all the time. Then we have people killing themselves in Delta, for heaven's sake. Now we're going to open a third area before we solve the last two. I don't know why we're doing that.
All right. Well, I think that it's probably a basic philosophy that we have to follow, that renewable resource development in the state of Alaska is going to have to be a must sometime down the line. We know that agricultural programs in Alaska have worked in the past and that they can't work now, but when you have the government of the state of Alaska or the government of any entity managing agriculture right down to what size of a kitchen sink you can have and how deep the well is going to be and all of the rest of it, it's going to ultimately end up in disaster because you don't have the initiative, the drive, the individual drive. And in opening up the Top Jacket area, we have a plan where we wanted to open it up into 5 different stages, where that we have the high acreage area where the grains would be grown, the middle sections where we would have up to 600 acre plots allocated for the development of large acreage farms. We'd call large acreage farms. We'd have the small acreage and then the homestead. We have a lot of class 2 and class 3 soils in the area. I would open it up on the basis of having it for proposals where the pieces of land by putting together a critique as to how they're going to develop that state land, and that they would buy it, would be fee title, and then they could take it out to the open market, the free market, and be able to finance it. And I think that we should have areas where we have grazing land, where we have large open fields where we can grow the barley or the wheat. We're in a different strata than they are in Delta. Delta, we have to take care of them, because what has happened there, Senator, is that we closed the door on a plan after the plan was about one third of the way into its program. In Nenana, in the Nenana Tontacket area, we've got probably about four or five times the basic land mass, and we're at 365 feet above sea level. We're at Delta, you're at about 1,100. And we want to say that we're not trying to point out Nenana Tontacket as a competition or a competitive thing to Delta, but this area should be opened up, and we should open it up on the basis of sweat equity, ingenuity, let them go in there without having all of the farm subsidies and all of the loan programs when the program started. Now, as far as the road structure is concerned, we agreed 2 years ago that we would start the program going by getting some kind of a transportation unit in there.
So Senator, what I hear you saying is this program will not come under when we open it up to existing loan grants for clearing low-cost loans for seed, the whole works, that they're going to have
on
their own private lending institutions, are we still talking?
Well, I think that if they would probably come under some of the farm, under some of the regular programs that you have in the Madison Valley or that you have in Devon. But I'm not talking about it being a structure where that you're going to go in like Point McKenzie, and you're going to get so many acres, and you're going to have so many dollars guaranteed you for clearing loan, and you're going to have so many dollars guaranteed you to put up a dairy barn, and you're going to get so many dollars guaranteed to buy the cows and all the rest of it. I think that day is gone. I think that experiment went out the window as that we're trying to salvage what we can out of that program right now to keep those people that we have on land, on place. But I think that if we had the road going through this area, that it would open up the opportunity for people to go out there with sweat equity and do it like it used to be done in the West.
Yeah, I have no criticism of your bill, Senator. But
I understand that.
Understood, but I see some conflicts here between what is said in your letter and what the Commissioner of Transportation said.
Well,
I agree that it's $5,640,000 for the construction of the following and five items in the condition. Construction of 22.8 miles of roadway. And according to the commissioner, this would cost approximately $440,000 per mile, which we talked about, or $10 million for 22.8 miles. And that would be on a pretty good road, because it will have to handle farm combines, logging trucks, dump trucks, etc. And if we don't go to that, then it would cost us approximately $200,000 per mile, or about $4,500,000. It seems like these figures are confusing me, because one letter says we can get it all for 5,630, and yet just the road itself, if we have it built to a secondary standard and 28 feet wide, it would cost $10 million. And if we go to the smaller 18-foot road, Pioneer Road, so to speak, 200, that would already be 4,000 or 4,500,000. And yet our maintenance of that would be extremely high. So I think there's probably some controversy between the two of them.
Oh, yeah, but you bet your boots there is, and that's the difference between self-determination on the local level and the damn bureaucracy, the bureaucracy that you have in the state. The thing is that when you start talking about a resource development of $123,000 or $5,400 per mile per year for maintenance of a resource development road, you're trying to keep had the experts coming in on the airplane today to give testimony in there in Seattle.
Senator, do you feel that these people could make themselves available Friday or Monday or what's your feeling if they could? So why don't we just hold them over? Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go ahead.
So they're en route or over, fine. Maybe we'll get them tomorrow on a discussion. If they show up, I'll check with you. The problem is that we're all so scheduled in the Senate that it's awful hard to schedule a special meeting.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
You know? So, I mean, if it's perfectly all right that I opened up the subject, and I know that it's a favorite subject of mine, and it's not necessarily a favorite subject of other people, but I think we've got to face it. You know? And if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit.
It was my favorite subject last year in the House. Also.
Yeah, on the opposite side of the aisle.
I never said that.
Well, I did.
I just hate that.
Let's be encouraged to the committee. Is there anybody that did want to testify on this bill that's sitting in the audience? So we don't shut anybody out. Okay, then we'll hold Senate Bill 39 over. How about Senate Bill 49?
Okay, Senate Bill 49 is basically a different subject, but it the Interior Transportation Needs Studies, which was put together by the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, is a part of the your file on Senate Bill 49. Senate Bill 49 is that we're spending many millions of dollars in promotional monies for the tourist industry, and one of the biggest single tourist attractions that we have in the state of Alaska is Denali. And Denali National Park or McKinley Park, the Park Service very adamant about not upgrading the road structure inside the park. And we've had two or three costly accidents of buses slipping off the roads. I think the time is very close where the Park Service is going to not allow trucks or private cars on that road, because there doesn't seem that they're having very much interest in bringing about a better road system. And I kind of agree with them, because if it's a wilderness system, if you get a high volume, high speed road through the park, well, you're going to drive all of the wildlife back away from the scenery where the visitors that want to see the wildlife. So there was a proposal put together that we take a look at going in through the backside of the park. And if you look at your folder, we have a map in there. And on this map, you'll see the boundaries of the park. Well, there's a new boundary system that because now you have the national park, you have the park preserve that follows in there. But there is a road right now from Lignite that goes in and has been constructed to Stampede, which is the old Pilgrim Mine. And that's the mine where all of the antimony has been mined during World War II and after World War II. You have the old sled road that goes from Rex, route that goes in, and you have the Bail Trail or the Pot Jacket route that comes down, follows the Kantishna River down to past Bear Paw, and then goes up the Kantishna River to the Wonder Lake area. In the Kantishna, just next to or right outside of the boundaries, there's quite a bit of patented land in the old town site of the Kantishna. Probably be in that area that you'd get an awful lot of private development if there was some form of transportation system going into the backside of the park, which would be a state maintained highway. And these routes that we have on this map are all part of the 2477 routing structures. They're all existing trails that have been identified as Kantishna route trails. What we'd like to do is to take Cantina area on the new road structure. And I would say that probably that construction of that new road is probably 4 or 5 years down the road to even get on the road, depending on what the Park Service does with their structure. The saturation of the park road is almost and that's the reason for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You probably said this, but I missed it. Who owns the property then outside of the park boundary?
State.
It's all state land from the Parks Highway going north to the National Park Boundary to the Kenistishnet River is all state land in here?
Yes.
What ag project do you have planned for this area in the future?
I have no ag project planned for it. You have, it goes through the project and an extension of the project. And plus the fact is that you have a multiple resource area. If you use a particular route to get in there, you would be getting into that state of doing with temperatures in that area.
I have one more question, if I could. Senator, believe me, I share your desire to open up some of the country, but this summer I had two occasions to drive the highway past the entrance to Denali Park. I was just shocked. That's a mess. The entrance is a mess. All the haphazard commercial development, cars everywhere, people off the road, children running everywhere. It looked exactly like Yellowstone National Park looks to me. Gosh, I hate to have that happen on the backside, too. Have you thought ahead to, they say that in 20 years, 5,000 cars would be on that road. I don't think it would take 5 or 20 years. The way people in the lower 48 love to visit national parks. I mean, they make that their family outing is to hit every national park before the kid is 12. And have you thought at all about the effect of the park, the backside of the park?
Well, I think that the effect of the backside of the park would be to afford a tremendous recreational area for inside Alaskan people as well as outside Alaskan people, because you could have a year-round resort back there on patented land in the Kantishna area. And I think that going through there on these trails, there would be 2477 trail right-of-ways. And on your map, which we did not get, there's the park boundary on the north side has been extended up. So you'd be in park.
What's the pink line?
The pink line is the existing park road.
Oh, okay.
Right. The blue line is the Lignite to Stampede Trail, which is in dark, which is already in.
Okay. Isn't the park boundary in between the pink and the blue line?
No, it used to be. It's been raised up, and then you go 2.5 townships up. Put a line all the way across from the Parks Highway all the way across to the Kantishna River. Then there is an area that they call Park Preserve that even goes beyond that.
Is there a hunting areas in here? Are the big game hunters going to be affected?
No.
There are no hunting areas in here.
Well, there's the Kantishna River area, but the Park Service has come all the way up to the Kantishna River here, so there's no hunting in the park, Jen.
Okay, so maybe Mr. Chairman, staff could get us an accurate map of the current park boundary.
We'll get you an I've got it right here if you want to see it.
Okay.
So, Senator, the study, the variable yellow fund.
One of them. The other one would be the orange line to the yellow line, the blue line all the way in.
All of those
would be the basic route studies, and to see which one would be the quote the most economic advantage to the state.
And to build any of these routes would require assent by the Park Service.
Yes, and they're in favor of it.
They're
in favor of the study because they would like to make a bus wilderness route out of the existing route, where that there would be no car or truck traffic on that route.
Okay.
inside the existing park route, inside the existing park route now, but to come into the Cantishna lake area.
I can't, Mr. Chairman, try to visualize the four-lane highway that's over 55 miles an hour.
What's that, sir?
I said that I can't hardly visualize going 55 miles an hour on a four-lane highway.
Through the park?
Right here.
That's why we're trying to keep it from that route. We want to open up the tourist trade into Denali, but you're going to curb it. If you don't have some kind of an access into the back side of the park. And not through the park.
Thank you.
Yes, so the Stampede Trail route is right through the park. That would not be feasible to look at, right?
Senator Fates, it used to be just outside
right.
of the park.
But it is now inside.
But with the new extension of the park, yes, it's all inside the park. In fact, the bill that we voted on today with the exchange of the Dunkel Hill mine on the Cantwell side took another chunk out of this little section here. That's the Wolf Township.
Any further questions?
We're asking for the study, and I can supply more information for you if you want. We can reschedule it, or if you want to pass it out over to finance, well, we can do that and have the stuff from the Park Service at that time.
Turn, Andy. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to give testimony regarding Central 49? We do have two folks. So, you're finished with your presentation. Why don't we hear from these two folks?
Okay.
Maybe you can help identify yourself.
For the record, my name is Phil Holsworth. I've been doing some research. In fact, I got some of the backup information for these deals, and the questions have been raised here about the Stampede Road from Lake Knight over being in the park. It was maybe not at all useful to include that in one of the studies. But I think I'd like to point out that road is one of the few we have in Alaska that will qualify under RS-2477 rights of way. Because in territorial days, when I was Commissioner of Mines, we spent money to end up with bills and private money spent on it, too. And I think this would be a good test case to eventually, it probably
service approval have to be given. The chairman said yes, it's good. But I'm also hearing that maybe the state could let the Bilbo Road proceed with the project subject to a suit by the Park Service to stop it. I mean, I am hearing two different things. Is it contemplated that this would be done only with the Park Service assent, or would or conceivably would the state be adversary to the Park Service if the Park Service didn't want the road built?
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that. The RS-2477 process requires DOT and DNR to provide sufficient backup information so that a particular road or trail will qualify under that federal statute, which means the funds would have to have been spent, the road developed prior to 1976. Now, the two state agencies must submit to BLM sufficient information to justify them putting them on BLM plaques. Then when it comes time to, BLM is saying today, they didn't say this in the beginning, they're saying today that they don't have the authority to actually approve that. They can get it on their plaques. Then it will have to be a court determination as to whether or not it will qualify, and if it does qualify, then it has to go to the Congress for approval. So this is kind of a long-range deal, but it's...
Mr. Chairman, to augment what Mr. Holdsworth is saying, is that they cannot deny us the right-of-way lines on the maps. In other words, if they were historical there before under RS-2477, we can say we want to have that right-of-way. Then we have to go through the right-of-way process from that point on, but they can't say, no, there's not going to be any road across this area. If there was a historical trail there before, a historical, then that opens the ledger for us in order to get. Does that, do you understand that, Joe?
Well, my problem with, my question is this. It's one thing to say that we want to study the road because it has advantages, it will disperse the tourists and put less
Mile Road goes from Lignite towards the backside of the park up. It's 8 miles to 8 Mile Lake, and I drove our car in there this fall. It's in good shape. In fact, there have been state land disposals in that area, and you have cabins springing up all over the place now. You can take a four-wheel drive vehicle and you can go all the way to the Savage River. Beyond the Savage River, it's growing up because you can't get across the Savage River. But UTAN construction hauled out of there for 3 years and hauled antimony from there into Lignite. And it was used up until about 59, 60. And Phil was the one that administered it. It was probably one of the first resource roads that we ever really took on. The route from Stampede Pine, where the blue is dotted, there to the Cantation area, is an old trail route that was used years ago. And in fact, all of the routes going in there are trail routes that are in there.
Thank you.
My name is Jane Anderson, and I'm a volunteer for the Alaska Environmental Lobby. The lobby is a coalition of 18 member groups representing about 5,000 residents of Alaska. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testimony today on HB 49, Senate Bill 49. I also happen to live in Senator Coghill's district and have lived in that area for about the past 8 years. For the record, the Alaska Environmental Lobby is opposed to Senate Bill 49. The issue of building the Cantation Road, whether it is along the Stampede Road or some other route, is not a new idea. It has been around for some time and has been discussed. I realize that this is just an appropriation for the feasibility study, and generally that is a good idea to plan something before something is built. However, in this case, especially in the day of declining revenues, we feel that the $500,000